Well, good afternoon, Juno. It's a couple of seconds before 3 o'clock in the afternoon. In Juno, you're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore, I'll be hosting Juno Afternoon today. And I have a really interesting slate of guests. Dixie Belcher and Kathy Hill are coming in to talk to us about a set of presentations on food and community greenhouses and things like that. We'll get to them first today. Southeast Alaska's sailing organization is going to be talking with us. Sean Bailey will be here to tell us about their activities for the summer. Kathy Ruddy and Bill Overstreet will be here to highlight the Whale's Tail Trail. 6-foot-high tails that are to be decorated, and we'll find out about high school graduation activities as well. Weather looks like cloudy. Scattered showers diminishing in the afternoon. Highs around 57. Light winds, and tonight cloudy. Scattered showers. Lows around 44. East winds up to 10 miles per hour.
Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. One of British Columbia's largest First Nations has declared a state of emergency. The chief says it's over a cluster of suicides and attempted suicides. More from Dan Karpinchuk in Canada.
The chief of the Cowichan tribe says suicide is tearing his community apart, and he's asking the government for help and has appealed to young people of the First Nation to embrace life. Harvey Alphonse says many young people have lost their will to live, and that's led to a spike in suicides and attempted suicides. 3 young men have killed themselves in the past 2 months. 48 others are considered at risk of committing suicide. Chief Alphonse says the situation has become overwhelming.
It's devastating. Whenever an individual is successful, it impacts not only the immediate family, but the entire community.
The province of BC says it will help the tribes get what they need. Mary Pollock is the province's Minister of Aboriginal Affairs.
We've seen the great pain that has occurred within First Nations communities. It means that there is great healing that needs to take place. And from time to time, you see that reflected in things like the outrageously high suicide rates amongst First Nations communities. But we are quite confident we can make that difference and bring to bear the resources they need.
But Alphonse is also calling on the federal government to begin work on an urgent basis to address suicide prevention. The federal minister of health says her department will be in contact to also offer help. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Johnny Depp is adopted by a Comanche woman. LaDonna Harris says a private ceremony with the actor took place last week in her home in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Harris says when she learned Depp was playing a Comanche in the film The Lone Ranger, she recognized the opportunity to connect him with the Comanche Nation.
Bringing people into our tribe enriches our tribe. In the fact that we have new relatives and more relatives. And so we decided we would ask him, since he was there filming in New Mexico and he was turning Tonto into a Comanche. So we asked him if he would be interested in joining our family, and he seemed to be very excited and very pleased that we asked. And so it all happened just kind of like magic.
Harris says the ceremony included Depp taking the Comanche name Mawumi, which means shapeshifter.
We thought that was an appropriate name for him of all of the different characters that he has played in his life, and that he has that kind of magic of changing into whatever role he plays. So that's kind of a form of magic and medicine as we see it. So that was the name we gave him.
Harris says the adoption means a lot to her family and the tribe, but the adoption does not give him financial gain or benefits. Harris is the president and founder of the advocacy organization Americans for Indian Opportunity. She says about 30 people attended the ceremony, which included family, her staff, and the leader of the Comanche Nation. The Navajo Nation announces Navajo Nation identification cards are now ready for public distribution. According to the Navajo Nation, the tribal ID cards can be used for identity verification and for crossing the borders of Canada and Mexico. The tribe worked with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security on the IDs. On this day in 1988, a 15-foot sculpture was dedicated in honor of the Forest County Potawatomi tribe. The bronze sculpture looks west over the Fox River, where they once lived until forced removal from the area in the 1830s. The statue was named Akwaba, the one who watches over, by a tribal elder, religious leader, and language and culture director, Bill Daniels Jr. A miniature version of the statue is housed at the Tribal Executive Building in Crandon, Wisconsin. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
I'm Billy Mills. As a grandfather and Olympic athlete, I know the importance of keeping kids healthy. The Children's Health Insurance Program in your state can provide your child additional health coverage, such as dental care, vision care, and emergency services. Enrolling your child can also help maximize health resources at your travel clinic. To learn more, contact your clinic or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW or visit insurekidsnow.gov.
Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Five after four, 5 minutes and 40 seconds after four. Let's take a quick look at that weather forecast again to kind of make sure we've got good notes on what's happening here, because it's going to be cloudy today with scattered showers, and then tonight it's going to be cloudy with scattered showers, and then Wednesday it's going to be cloudy with scattered showers. You got all those notes? Okay, on Wednesday night we're looking at cloudy with isolated showers, and wait a minute, here it comes. Thursday we're talking about mostly cloudy. The word showers did not appear on Thursday. It did not appear on Thursday night. It does not appear on Saturday, but Saturday night it says there's going to be a chance of rain. So we got Thursday and Friday coming up. Saturday could be just cloudy and not the shower part, huh? I think that's wonderful. That's the way Juno ought to work. We got some people here who have some ideas about how we can make Juno work a little bit better. And I'm going to introduce two folks here, Kathy Hill and Dixie Belcher, who are both with Turning the Tides. And they're going to talk about a gentleman who is coming to Juneau, who is going to tell us some wonderful things about the things that he's learned in how many years living on the farm in Tennessee and writing about environmental issues?
He's been on the farm in Tennessee since the early 70s. He walked there when he finished law school.
This is Kathy Hill, who is the gentleman's sister, and his name is?
This is Albert Bates.
Okay.
And the farm is, put quotes around, the farm.
Yeah.
It's one of the few hippie communes that made it.
Yeah, that survived.
And it's called The Farm, and there's many books written about it.
Yeah, capitalized. Yeah. The Farm, yeah. Yeah, those of us who grew up reading the Whole Earth Catalog and still kicking them around trying to figure out how they fit on a coffee table are familiar with The Farm. It was one of the places that we all thought about going back in the 60s and 70s when we were trying to figure out how the alternative goes. Well, here we are in Juneau. What is Albert Bates going to come to Juneau and talk to us about?
Go for it.
Well, we're part of Turning the Tides, and our new project is community gardens, community greenhouses in Juneau. And this actually came about because I saw a TV show a couple of years ago about community greenhouses in Moscow, Russia. They had 30 acres, wall-to-wall greenhouses, and they grew all the food, all the fresh produce for Moscow. And I thought, you know, if they can do it, why can't we do it?
There's a good question.
Yeah.
And why can't we do it?
Yeah. So, and Kathy mentioned that Albert was her brother, and then I looked at his bio, and he's a very impressive person.
Well, he has written a couple of books.
He's written
more
11.
Than that, 11
yeah.
books. But I think one of the first ones was the Post-Petroleum Survival Guide and Cookbook. That's from back in the early 2000s.
No, the first one was about climate change. Well, the first recent one was about climate change. And Al Gore wrote the foreword. And then Al Gore covered the same material the next year in his own book. But Al Gore and my brother were friends. And my brother was pleased that Al Gore stole all his material because he gets a much
yeah,
wider audience.
Much wider audience than your brother did. And then the latest book, I think, was written in 2010, and that's the Biochar Solution.
Yeah, Biochar is what made me think the information that my brother is the keeper of is what the greenhouse group needs to make sure that we get off on the right foot.
Now, there's a whole bunch of people in Juneau that have raised a voice in the last, year or two. Maybe I just became sensitive to it in the last year or two, but it seems to me that Slow Foods, we've had them on this program, the community gardens, the master gardeners, the Extension Service has become extremely activated since we got our new extension agent here in town, what, 3 years ago, something like that.
The City Sustainability Commission?
Yes. I had the gentlemen on here that were part of the team that put together this deal with the trash collectors to get us to the point where we can recycle plastics up through grade 7, which is a big difference for us because we've only been able to do 1 and 2. Is it your intention to try to bring some of that together? Because it seems to me there's this that we're a Hydra monster here. We're a Hydra-headed thing where we have all of these people talking.
We're certainly going to be talking to all these people and trying to do some of that. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. We need a coalition of all the interests in Juneau who would like to see Juneau be more sustainable, more survivable if the boat doesn't come.
It seems to me that this your brother who's coming here to talk to us might be part of the catalyst for that purpose, because if a number of people came together and heard him, particularly if there were the possibility of them mingling afterward or something like that. I don't know. Does your program include something that would open into a community discussion?
We hope to have discussions after this, you know, and for the Juneau World Affairs Council, people always go to dinner afterwards.
Uh-huh.
Actually, we're going to have a small meeting on Tuesday at noon at the Bill Ray Center downstairs for people that are interested in the greenhouse and in permaculture. This just happened.
This is next Tuesday.
This is next Tuesday.
And
yeah,
this
yeah.
is at the Jack? Did
this
you
is
say?
At the Bill Ray Center.
At the Bill Ray Center.
At
okay.
noon at the first yeah. floor. I forgot the room
okay.
number.
Okay, well, there'll be signs.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and we're going to get in touch with all of these people that are interested. And I think you're right, there's a lot in Juneau. I'd like to talk about the titles of his.
Yeah, so people know what's coming up.
Yeah. So the first one is on Tuesday, May 29th at 7 o'clock. It's the UAS Egan Lecture Hall, which is room 112 of the Egan Building.
Egan Building.
And the name of the talk is Juneau 2030, Carbon Negative, Non-Nuclear, and Prospering in Degrowth. And I mean, this is Guy is a futurist. He works with the United Nations. A lot of things, interesting titles, I think. And then the next day, Wednesday, May 30th at 5 o'clock, at the Juneau World Affairs Council in the K2 Studios, the title is Energy Security Without Going Broke, Destroying the Climate, or Militarizing the Arctic Ocean.
And that's a Juneau World Affairs Council sponsored event.
Those
are held in the KTOO studios, and specifically that allows a kind of an open question and answer format to follow any of the discussions, because it's a much more intimate setting in many ways. So,
I think it's important that probably everybody knows this, but this does not mean he's going to be on the radio. It just means that he's going to be speaking at the studios live for. A bunch of people.
Right, and it allows us to record the discussion as well, which is nice to be able to show it under another circumstance. So, why would Albert Bates have something to say to Juneau? I mean, the guy's from Tennessee, after all. What is it that he's bringing to us?
Albert has really explored these issues all over the world. He's been to Iceland. He's been to Russia. He just taught a permaculture class in Belize. His experience is all over the whole planet. He has observed what works, what doesn't work in all kinds of environments, all kinds of climates, all kinds of groups, cultures, you name it. He has such a broad background in helping people go more green that it's hard to find someone who's more knowledgeable or a more entertaining speaker. Even if he weren't my brother, I'd want to go to these things. The other thing that is unusual about this guy is that, you know, everybody talks about global warming, how everything, you know, the acidification of the ocean, on and on, how awful it is. And he comes in and he says, here's some solutions. And, you know, most of us don't even know there's solutions. And he talks about them. And they're actually quite quick. If the awareness was raised a little bit. It's quite quick. It's very interesting.
It's worth, I think it's going to be worth listening to this guy.
Oh, and Hearthside is going to be stocking his books. They're being air freighted. They should be there this week.
So
and
we have a chance to read.
You have a chance to read his books before he actually gets here. And I think some of his books are probably e-books, and you can order them on Amazon also. Uh-huh. All you need to know is the name Albert Bates.
There we go. So let's do the times and dates again. It's the first talk is at the UAS Egan Center. It's Tuesday, May 29th. It's at 7 p.m. It's in the Egan Lecture Hall, and that's the Juno 2030 Carbon Negative Non-Nuclear and Prospering in Degrowth. And then on Wednesday, May 30th at 5 p.m., Energy Security Without Going Broke, Destroying the Climate, or Militarizing the Arctic Ocean. That will be in the KTOO studios here in this building at 5 p.m. on Wednesday, May 30th.
And if anybody wants to come and talk about greenhouses and permaculture, there will be, he's going to be speaking at the Bill Ray Center in the first floor, at a room on the first floor at noon on next Tuesday, the 29th.
Good enough. Okay, well, thank you very much for letting us know that Albert Bates is coming to town. I'm sure we'll get some response, and I'm hoping that there's a big crowd for all three of the meetings that you're talking about. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. When the weather was good, bird photographer and watercolor painter Craig Johnson and his wife Joy headed to the nearest wetland to scout for short-eared owls, violet-green swallows, green-winged teal. Each day was an adventure. At night, Craig would paint from what they'd seen. Then, a few years ago, though still in his 40s, a progressive and debilitating disease crept into his life. Their birdwatching shrank to the confines of their yard. Here's Craig.
I daily wheel my chair out onto the deck and observe the birds, and it's uplifting and rejuvenating. I definitely feel in some way connected with the wildlife in this yard, particularly the birds. Sometimes they'll land so close I can see right into their eye. And I sometimes see injured birds, birds that are not well. And I realize I'm not alone, even amongst my fellow humans, but also with the natural world as well.
You'll find links to the painting, photography, and books by Craig and Joy Johnson on our website, birdnote.org.
It's 17 minutes and 30 seconds after 3 o'clock, looking at weather that will change from the current cloudy with the scattered shower kind of thing around Thursday or so. We're looking at only partly cloudy in the forecast, so we can look forward maybe to a few days, Thursday and Friday, of the sun peeking through the clouds. It'd be very nice. Doesn't say anything about high winds or anything like that. It says light winds, east winds to 10 miles per hour and so forth, and so we have two people here who care a lot about the winds. This is Sean Daly and Ruth Kostick, and they are with the Southeast Alaska Sailing Group. And tell us about the season that's coming up, or that is in the midst, I guess. You've already had a race or two, right?
We did. We had our first kickoff race, which was on May 13th. It was a day race. They went out around Grand Island and stuff. But coming up this weekend, we have the Jay Ginter Memorial Day Regatta, which is actually kind of a three-day race that goes out to Taku Harbor. And it starts just out in the Gastineau Channel, out by Mayflower Island, by the Douglas Harbor, on Saturday morning at 9:30.
So who can be in these races? Who is in these races?
Well, basically it's anybody who has a love of sailing and is interested in participating. And the SEAS organization is relatively loose in terms of how you can get involved. It's really all about getting people on the water. And,
uh-huh.
you know, for the races, we do have a sign-up form and a small fee of like $10, I think, per race. And it's primarily to cover a little bit of insurance for the group-organized events that that do occur in case somebody gets hurt or something like that, or boat's damaged. But you know, the point of the matter is to try to get as many sailors together on the water as possible and sharing this common love of the wind and sea. So,
yeah, there are some requirements, I think, though, for the captain of the vessel.
Well,
first of all, you have to be over 20 feet, right?
Yeah. Well, that's actually for the air, which we can talk about in a bit.
Yeah.
But for the Seas Cup races, you know, it's specifics are posted on the website, but I think you're basically looking for people that have some experience sailing, somebody who, if they're taking other people out, are going to be knowledgeable enough to have a safe experience for anybody that's going with them. But for the Seas Cup races, it's pretty loose. I mean, we get out in some pretty serious water, but at the same time, we don't want to prohibit people from being able to participate. And we do have a race committee that is on call to help make a determination as to whether or not somebody's boat is safe enough to get out into the longer runs. You know, really, it's a matter of coming to talk to us. And
well, speaking of your website, I spent a little time on it earlier today, and there's a little tab over on the side that says who's looking for crew and who's available for crew. So you got to kind of little marry up here for people who don't have boats.
Yeah, we do. In fact, I don't have a boat. I started a couple years ago as an inexperienced. I had never been on an ocean sailboat. I grew up sailing a little bit in Minnesota on lakes. And little dinghies and stuff, but never anything like this. And I kind of was like, oh, you know, this looks like fun. I'd like to try that. And I ended up on a boat called Haiku, and I'm in my third summer of crewing now. And I just go and, you know, mostly on the same boat, but sometimes if other people need crew, and I'll go on other boats as well. And it's a great way to get involved, especially if you're not kind of sure, if you're trying to figure out. And what's great for that are Get the Boat Out nights, which are Wednesday nights here in Gastineau Channel, which we just go out for a couple hours. And so it's a good time to really get a sense of what it's like to be on a sailboat, especially if you're inexperienced and you're not sure, and to get to find a skipper who maybe you have a good match with or you really get along with well. Because on the longer races, you are spending, you know, even on a day race, you're spending 8-10 hours in a boat in a small space with that person. So
that's a really good point. It, you know, we also are having the Get Out the Boat races occurring on Friday nights as well out
that's
in
right.
Ock Bay. But those are the best way to get involved with the group, because it's really, you're out, not really out for more than a couple hours, and you do get to get a sense of what you're getting into. Because if you jump onto a boat for a day race or a 3-day race, and you find yourself getting seasick in the first couple hours of that experience, or being a little bit more than what you expected, you end up putting a lot of pressure on the skipper to turn the boat around and take you back to town, because there's no place to get off along the way.
No.
You got to be committed, basically.
Yeah.
And the Get Out the Boat races are just a wonderful opportunity for that, because you find out pretty quickly whether this is for you.
So if you wanted to ride on somebody's boat for the Get Out of the Boat, how would the dynamics of that work? Get on the website or
yep,
show
up on
the
website. The website is an element in development, and we are continuing to try to figure out improved ways of promoting that education flow or the communication flow between skippers and potential crew.
Uh-huh.
And so keep an eye on how that works. But as it stands right now, you can sign up and then be put in the loop of the email chain that goes around.
Mm-hmm.
So. Uh-huh. And sure, once you get in touch, we'll be telling you more about updates to the website.
Yeah, okay. So. Now, you also sponsor a couple of pretty big races. As a matter of fact, I think one of them is the longest sailboat race in the on the Western...
The longest inland sailboat race on the West Coast, for sure.
Yeah.
I think it may very well be in the country, but I think there's some Great Lakes races that are pretty long as well.
So what's that?
That's the Around Admiralty race. And for seas, it has two different versions on alternating years. This year, for example, it's what we're calling the Admiralty Island Relay, or Rally, sorry. It's basically where it's geared a little bit more towards promoting a cruising experience of the race, although each day race is pretty competitive for some.
Mm-hmm.
Others are just sailing to the next anchorage where we all get together and have a raft up dinner or something of the sort. Mm-hmm. But basically, we end up spending about a week getting down to Baranof Warm Springs, and we have specific locations that we are headed to that are our start and finish lines for each day. It's a great way to expand your cruising capability here in Southeast because you have other boats around you. If you have a mechanical problem, we've had that happen in the past where we're able to pool our resources of parts and pieces and make sure that all the boats made it to the end. And Baranof Warm Springs is a wonderful stopover. We spend a couple days there before heading back around Admiralty Island. Depending on which direction we're going that year, this year it's leaving from downtown and finishing in Ock Bay. And other years we've gone the other direction. So that's the air. The Admiralty race, which is the Spirit of Admiralty, I think is what we're calling it now.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Yeah, that's the a little bit more hardcore 24/7 sailing race where you need to have a boat that is capable and a crew that's capable of sailing through the night, because you basically leave the starting line near Juneau and you stop at Baranof Warm Springs. Oh. And it doesn't matter how many days or hours it takes to do it, you don't stop along the way to anchor up. It's a straight run.
That one doesn't run every year, though, right?
It doesn't. That'll be next year. So yeah. the air and the
and the Spirit of Admiralty.
Thank you. Yeah. The Spirit of Admiralty will alternate years for seasons.
So in an even numbered year you do air, and in an odd numbered year you're doing the Spirit of Admiralty.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. And it's really all about trying to promote the two pieces of sailing that we find people attracted to. One is getting out cruising, experiencing this wonderful region that we live in. The other is to actually partake in this more competitive spirit of racing. So,
when I bought my sailboat, a number of people said to me, you don't really want to do that in Juneau because the wind is terrible. Is that true? I haven't found it that way. But but I wonder, because I was told, you want to put it down at Sitka because the wind's good in Sitka. And I was trying to figure, because they said I'd always be loading up sail here.
Well, it varies. We've had plenty of days where we're just drifting with the tide for a good portion of the day, but inevitably the wind picks up and you get to where you want to go, or you're scratching your motor, because all the boats have motors too.
Yeah. Somebody said, though, that if you have a motor on a boat, then you're going someplace. If you have a sail on a boat, you're already there.
that's a good way to look at it. It's the experience, the process of getting there, not the destination that you got to keep in mind. But conversely, we had just two consecutive weekends of awesome sailing. I mean, we had a 20-knot day last weekend where three of us went out around Grand Island and back, and it was rail in the water, beating into 20, 25 knots of wind, and then running with the same on the way back to town. Right. And I think that was the fastest run we've done around Grand Island since I moved to Juneau 8 years ago. And that was quite an experience. I think everybody on my crew was pretty charged about that.
We've noticed changes in the climate. For a long time, everybody was denying that. Is there any change in the winds that you sense?
Well, it's tough for me to say. I haven't been here long enough, to be honest with you. But, one of the first seasons I was here in Juneau back in 2004, I think it was, we had our Admiralty race, and it was 80 degrees and flat calm for almost the entire race. It was excruciatingly painful. Because you're out there just, slack sails, drifting in beating sun, and for some reason on the water it seems hotter on hot days and colder on cold days.
I sure hear that. Anyway, so if you wanted to get somebody to talk to about all of this stuff, whom would you speak to?
I think the best thing for that is our website, which is seasailing.us. I found, for me, I have trouble sometimes typing that out, and I just end up Googling Southeast Alaska Sailing, and it'll take you to our website.
Sailing Juneau does exactly the same thing.
Yes.
It's right there.
And we are also on Facebook. We have a Facebook page that is relatively new, so we're trying to keep that up and a good way to get information as well.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's the best way, because it's more of a informal club, so we don't have an office, we don't have a phone to call, so the best way is just to go through the website.
So you hold meetings?
We do hold meetings. Actually, we have a monthly board meeting, and then I'll get into another element of this, which is our off-season sailor talk programs that basically we put together every month starting in January. a gathering of sailors to talk about anything from the stories of our previous season to the trips we are planning to take to what we're fixing to what other element of or aspect of sailing we're interested in.
Are those held in one place or do they drift around?
Well, since we started doing them last year, we've been holding them in the Office of Northwind Architects in downtown. It's at 126 Seward Street. And they'd occur basically, I think it was every second Wednesday of the month, and from like 6 to 8 or 6 to 10. And we'd have kind of treat it like a potluck, snacks and drinks and the like. And we'd have a projector up for people to bring digital media to talk about, and big table for people to lay out parts and pieces that they broke or wanted to bring to everyone's attention. And we had some great projects kicked off for some of us anyway. Talking about what our goals were with the group, I hooked up a Jiffy reefing system on my boat, for example, based on conversations and research with this group and the like. And
that's in the off season.
That's in the off season. We're in
the
season.
Now the meetings are held on the boats.
Now the meetings are held on the boats, and we usually have a beginning of the season kind of picnic down at Sandy Beach, and there's usually an end of season kind of picnic to kind of get together and talk about and what the season was past, and just share stories and share food. Mm-hmm. And
a couple of things we've tried doing this year that we'll see what kind of success they have in the future. But with our kickoff picnic at Sandy Beach this year, we had a used boat junk yard sale, and a bunch of people brought accessories that they had that they wanted to get rid of. And I think most of us that brought something had things for sale, and then a larger table of things that were for free, just to get them out of our garage. But, for example, one gentleman brought miles of Kevlar line, it seemed, for rigging.
Yeah.
And another guy had just hardware store ropes on his boat and needed to get rid of that and put some real rigging on it. So it's a perfect union there. But the other is we've been trying to develop a kind of informal barbecue for the people on the water associated with our get out the boat Wednesdays and trying to, in nice weather, do a raft up down at DuPont and see how that works out.
So the next thing that goes on with the club is Wednesday night's Get Out the Boat.
Yeah.
And that'll be in the
Gastineau
Harbor.
Channel.
And then if you don't get to that one, Friday night, Get Out the Boat out in Knock Bay.
Correct.
That's correct.
And check the website, see if anybody wants a crew. Come out and join the party, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I am sailing. I am sailing home again across the sea. I am sailing stormy water to be near you, to be free. I am flying. I am across the sky, I am flying, passing high clouds, to be near you, to be free. Can you hear me? Can you hear me through the dark night, far away?
Well, an invitation to sailing, and the Southeast Alaska sailing folks are waiting for someone to call on Wednesday and maybe join the Get the Boat Out project on Wednesday night and Friday night. Wednesday is at Gastineau, and Friday's out in Auk Bay, so if you're interested in sailing, you don't have a boat, give them a call. They can probably hook you up with a crew. They're also on the web. And my next guests are two ladies who are going to tell us about, a delicate subject, shall we say, whales and tails. Come now. I have with me Kathy Reddy, and I'm sorry, your name again is?
Kathy Reddy and Lorraine Durr.
Lorraine Durr, yes, Lorraine Durr, thanks. And you're talking about 12 blank, 6-foot-high replicas of whales' tails.
Correct.
Anyone else who had acquired those things would be thinking about having a huge garage sale. What's your plan?
Our plan is to solicit artists and have artists decorate them so that we can display them around town and we can have a whale tail trail.
A whale tail trail. Okay, so what are these things made out of? They're not pieces of whale, right?
No. Correct.
No, okay.
They're not whalebone.
Okay.
They're made out of a resin. You take two big barrels of stuff and you mix it together and you get this resin and they pump it into a mold that students made on campus.
Oh, so the UAS art students created the tail.
Under the direction of Pedar Dahlthorpe, the sculpture professor out at UAS.
Uh-huh. I've seen these. When you walk in the back parking lot there, like you're going to the chancellor's office.
Correct.
There's this row of rosin whale tails, which are quite intriguing as you walk past them. I wondered what they were and who was doing this.
Wonder what the chancellor's up to.
You kind of say to yourself, this is strange to see. But there they are. So your idea is that people will apply to decorate these.
Correct. And they can use any media that they want. They may use pottery, they could use painting, they could use jewels, just whatever they have in their mind to decorate a whale's tail.
Results in a decorated whale's
Correct.
Tail. So did you have some kind of strange dream? Or
I have strange dreams all the time.
Well, I'm wondering about the source. How did this come about? How do we suddenly have whale's tails as the idea?
Well, I was in Chicago, and I saw the cows in Chicago several years ago, and then I was in Louisville for a meeting, and I saw the horses in Louisville. A year ago, then, they did salmon in Anchorage.
And they did bears in Missoula, and
pigs
and cows on Wall Street. I remember seeing the bulls on Wall Street. Yes. Those were absolutely dramatic, huge and bronze, but ours are resin.
Well, they're easier to move.
That's right.
Okay. And once the tails are decorated by the artists who apply by, I believe it's June 1st that they
June
have
1st.
To get an application in, does that include the design work? Do they have to have
No, the application really is their name, their contact information, and then a description of what their idea is.
Okay.
And if they have a sponsor that they would suggest, they put that in. You don't need to suggest a sponsor. And then they need to get that application, which is available at the JAC and will be online as of tomorrow. But you get that application in by June 1st. And then the 12 artists selected will be matched up with sponsors.
Uh-huh.
And also, Pat, if somebody can't make it to the JAC or whatever, they could call either Kathy or I and we would fax them an application.
Okay, so three ways you can get the app. By tomorrow, it'll be up online. Today, you could get it at the JAC, and either of you folks, you could get contact with you, and you would be glad to get
That's
some
right.
faxed an application. Are you looking for anything? Do you have any designs on what you want folks to do with the tails, or are you just kind of, are you wide open?
Imagination, your wild imagination is the limit, I think.
Right, and if people do really fancy ones, they'll sell for more money. I mean, my ultimate goal is to make as much money as I can with the whale tail fundraiser.
And what are you going to do with the money, honey?
What are we going to do with the money?
The plan here?
The ultimate plan is building the 27-foot, the life-size bronze whale on Juneau's waterfront.
And fountain.
And we've got the intermediate stage in front of the JAC right now. And if you drive by the JAC, you can see the 8-foot whale, the intermediate stage. And then if you look at the shadow that projects on the wall of the jack. That's the size of the final whale. It is as tall as the jack is. And we are at the point where we have the foam. We have raised enough money where we have the foams carved. Skip Wallen, the artist, has carved the foams, and now we're on to making the molds. So the money will be used to make the molds.
And this will be bronze when it's finished.
Right.
Okay. How then, I get the idea that we have the tails. How are people going to give money for the tails? How's
auction,
the plan
September
work?
September 15th.
Okay. Good. So there's this public auction on September 15th. They'll be on display before that, I would assume. Where will people be able to see what they might buy?
All July and all of August, once the parade is over, the tails will be displayed throughout Juneau, at the choice of the sponsor's choice of location. If a bank sponsors, they can have the tail in their lobby. If other business type sponsors, they can choose where the whale will be located for all of July and all of August until the auction on September 15th.
Okay, and then on September 15th, they're all going to be gathered together, and where is the auction going to take place?
At the Jack.
At the Jack, okay, and people will be able to come to this auction. So then the question is, after I bid on the tail and I successfully win it, what's in it for me?
All right, well, a sponsor has a right of first refusal. So if they, if a bid is, say, $5,000 and the sponsor wants to match that bid, then they can take the tail for permanent. Or if they want, then the high bidder can take it. Is that your question?
Kind of.
So you can take your little piece of tail home with
you. You take it where...
I knew it. I saw it coming, and it's so hard to get the opening, you know, so that someone can walk through it.
And so, okay. And we also would like to have people be able to go from tail to tail throughout town and you know, either count them or maybe vote on them. I don't know if we decided to do anything interactive like that, but we just want people to be able to experience these wonderful public art events all through July and August until the auction.
Now, the concentration of our discussion has so far been about the whales' tails that are being decorated and will be auctioned September 1st, but you have another event coming up between now and then, right?
September 15th.
September 15th, June, sorry.
Yeah.
And then you have this other event
that's
coming up on June 15th.
June 15th. Right? On June 15th, we've got a whale-watching cruise and salmon dinner at Orca Point Lodge that Allen Marine Line donated to us. So we will be selling tickets to the cruise and dinner until the 15th of June. So tickets are available at Hearthside, Oregon, at the Jack.
Yeah. How many people can go?
100 people can go.
100 people.
100 people at $100
each. At $100 each. Okay.
Right.
And this is an all-day cruise with Allen Marine, followed by dinner where?
At Orca Point Lodge. It actually is an evening cruise as opposed to all day.
Okay,
right.
And then out to Orca Point and back in our lovely long evenings here.
Correct.
When is the cruise?
June 15th.
Friday
night, June 15th.
Okay. So, and again, the tickets are at the Jack and at Hearthside Books.
Correct. Or online, jahc.org through Vendini.
Yeah, but there is 100 of these tickets. That's the end of that.
That's
so
right.
If you want to end on this thing, you better move.
And we're hoping that at that we will have a whale's tail, and we'll do a bit of a presentation about the whale's tails and decoration on the boat that day.
Uh-huh. Terrific. Two great-sounding events, and all of the money that's raised from all of this goes toward creating this harbor signature piece that's
absolutely
going to be seen by everyone who sails into Juneau and most people who walk around
in recognition of the 50th
like
anniversary
that.
Of statehood also.
Yeah.
It will be on the front of every piece of literature that's published about Juneau, just like the Sydney Opera House or the Little Mermaid in Copenhagen. I mean, it will be a recognizable symbol of Juneau.
And everybody gets a crack at being part of it.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
On a fateful day in the month of May, I was sitting catching fish when a magic whale swam up to the rail and said, "Please make a wish." So I said, "Well, gee, I'd love to be like you, a giant whale." Next thing I knew, I was grayish blue. And I had a two-ton tail. Sing a whale song. Sing a whale song. Sing a whale song. As the flounder said to the oyster bed, sing a whale song.
With a mighty leap, I dove down deep and swam out through the cove. Then I raced to the top, did a belly flop, and down again I dove. From the Arctic to the Baltic to the far-off Hebrides, like a submarine through the deep blue green. I swam the seven seas and sang a whale song. Sing a whale song. Sing a whale song. As the dogfish bark to the great white shark, sing a whale song. But there were some things I wish I could forget, like that garbage scow off of Curacao, or that oil spill below Brazil, or getting caught in that giant net, and I couldn't get out, and oh, was I upset. So I had to hail that magic whale who changed me back once more, saying, now that you know the great below, we need your help on shore. To tell your tale of being a whale and all you've seen and done, then wet and dry we'll unify, and all the world is one. We'll sing a whale song. Sing a whale song. Sing a whale song. From the smallest ant to the tallest tree, from the highest peak to the deepest sea, all the world will ring in harmony and sing a whale song.
A whale song and a whale's tale. Folks are going to be seeing whale's tales all around the town, according to our last set of guests. However, with me now is something that we're going to be seeing the end of this month, and that will be people with strange medieval hats on their heads as they walk across stages and graduate from high school. With me right now is Christy Berger from Yokosuka High School, Ryan Alsip from JDHS, and Dan Larson from TMHS, and they're going to tell us about the upcoming festivities as we wave our graduates across the stage. So, who wants to talk first? Well, since Yokosuka goes first, Christy, we're going to have you talk about it. So what happens at Yokosuka at 1 o'clock on the 27th?
1 o'clock, we're graduating all our seniors. We have 43 seniors that will be walking across the stage this year. Our speaker is Dr. Rosarita Worrell from Sea Alaska Heritage. And, gosh, let's see, is there anything else I left out?
Who do you think your most interesting graduate will be?
Oh my gosh, we have so many interesting graduates. That's a hard thing to put one.
Well, then two or three.
Gosh, well, Gus Nelson, he has been working at getting his diploma for about 4 years. I think he's going on, so that will be a huge milestone for him.
Yeah.
So he's one of our, but they're all that way. They're all very unique. Sharon Harris has come back. She's graduating at the age of 20. Let's see. We have other students that are 19 that are also have come back, and they're graduating as well. So
a very touching ceremony for
many
of the people
always,
who are involved.
Always.
Families will be there and like that.
Yes, yeah. And there you don't have to have pre tickets. You can just come.
It's at Yokosuka.
Space available for everybody.
You're holding it where? At the Centennial Hall.
Centennial Hall.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, 1
so
p.m.
Big venue, so you've got plenty of room for everyone.
Yeah.
Okay. So how does this differ from the graduation ceremonies at JDHS? Which will be at 4 o'clock on the 27th.
Right, yeah. Graduation's 4 o'clock on the 27th, rain or shine, as we say.
Uh-huh.
JDHS, we have a very traditional graduation. Basically, it starts with the pomp and circumstance, and the students come on in. We do have tickets at our graduation. I believe we're giving 9 tickets out this year. One of the advantages of downsizing now that we have Thunder Mountain is that we're actually able to fit more people, bigger families, I guess, into the gym for the graduation. So that part is definitely fantastic. Our keynote speaker, our faculty speaker this year, is Sarah Hannon, and her message is, and I don't want to give really a lot away, give away her message, but really it's going to be a powerful one. something that'll probably be more emotional than you're used to at a graduation. But so I'll go ahead and leave that at that. But it's interesting, right? When I heard you ask about interesting students, I'd have a hard time putting that one into words. We have so many wonderful kids at JDHS, and I think district-wide, each kid that walks across that stage has their own unique story and, you know, something that has brought them there. Some kids have, you know, high school is easy sailing, and other kids really had a lot of hurdles to overcome along the way. But each one of them, I think, is an interesting story, and I'm proud of each and every kid. So.
Yeah. You get to shake all their hands.
Yeah, I do get to shake all their hands, and hopefully, you know, this year I hope they give me quarters. Last year they gave me Starburst, so, I figured we as well go for something that's
yeah,
valuable then, right?
But, yeah, you'd think $10 bills
$10 bills would be great.
Would be fine with you, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be happy with that. So.
The Ryan Alsip Travel Fund is available
exactly,
just to the left of the diplomas,
right? Yep, summer's coming, you know. Anyway.
Well, now that we've uncovered corruption in the schools. So, Dan, is this TMHS's first graduating class?
This is TMHS's third graduating class,
okay.
First four-year class.
First,
so it's the inaugural four-year class. We have 140 students walking. 98 of those students started as freshmen, so it's an exciting year, particularly for those 98 students who are pioneers of the Valley. We have senior breakfast Thursday the 25th at 8 a.m. Parents and guardians are welcome. Right after breakfast, there will be an academic and recognition ceremony, and following that, we'll have commencement practice in the gymnasium. We don't have tickets at this point, so it's come one, come all, open to all community members. The nice thing that we've done as a system this year is gone up at 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and 7 o'clock, so folks that have family and friends in any of the three schools are able to participate.
Now you mentioned the practice on the 25th, but the
correct.
Graduation is the night
27th.
Of the 27th at
yes,
7 o'clock.
They're all Sunday the 27th.
Right.
Our guest speaker is Mike Musel. He's a retired U.S. Coast Guard Chief of Staff, current Deputy Commissioner of Marine Operations for the state of Alaska. Pleased to have him as our keynote. As a faculty speaker, we have Brian Van Kirk, who is our instrumental music director. And three seniors that I'm going to miss for a variety of reasons. I'll just give a shout out to them. Lindsay Culver, James Gilchrist, and Camden Thomas. Three of my leaders.
Outstanding. There's a baccalaureate service at JDHS Auditorium on the 24th, I think. What time of day is that? 10 in the morning?
Give me a second. I'll find
7 p.m.
7 p.m.?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah,
okay.
On the 24th.
Yeah, the baccalaureate service is not graduation. It's a different kind of ceremony, and it's really a very touching ceremony that is part of all graduations. And a lot of seniors opt not to do it and should not, because mm-hmm. it's one of the real components of the graduation process. So I'm sure if I had a chance to advise any of them, I'd tell them to show up for baccalaureate.
Definitely.
That's really wonderful. Mm-hmm. What's the origin of that name, that word? Does anybody know? Baccalaureate?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I know it's the same root as bachelor's degree, so it's something mm-hmm. about graduating, mm-hmm. finishing. Okay. So one more time on dates, and in the case of JDHS, you got to get your senior is going to have 9 tickets.
In the way that the students earn their tickets, we'll have graduation practice like Thunder Mountain does, but ours will be on Friday. We're going to start Friday morning at 8:30 with graduation practice, and the kids who are there get their tickets at that time.
Okay. That's
and
when
then,
they pick up their tickets.
Right,
okay.
And then we follow that up with a senior barbecue as well, and just kind of it. Friday for us is a great day to celebrate the kids and have an opportunity to have staff, you know, participate in that while the rest of the kids are in school.
Similar thing like that at UCOSC at all? Or?
Graduation practice will be on the 24th, Thursday afternoon after school, so at 2:40.
Okay. 2:40. Okay, good. Yeah. All right, so practice and then and a point over here? Or?
Couple quick points. Want all parents and guardians to know that there's a safe graduation party at Centennial after the Thunder Mountain concluding ceremony, and to encourage all folks to go out there. I know the committee raised $25,000 to put on quite a show for our graduates, so we're excited about that. Also, Taylor White Foundation has DVDs out there on their website for parents to purchase and watch with their children. All the schools have been showing that particular DVD and the dangers of drinking and driving, and we want to emphasize that as well.
Which is always a real problem at around this time in every community. Seniors exercising a right they probably shouldn't exercise.
Right.
Thank you so much for filling us in on dates and times.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 22nd of May, 2012. It's the birthday of the comic book writer Hergé Georges Prosper Remy, born in Brussels, 1907, who created the comic strip about a boy whose life is full of adventure, The Adventures of Tintin. Tintin, a Belgian reporter, accompanied by his fox terrier, Snowy. The two of them go to Soviet Russia, Palestine, Tibet, even go to the moon. Hergé wrote 23 Tintin comic books, the first when he was just 22, and he was working on the 24th when he died at the age of 83. It's the birthday of Arthur Conan Doyle, born Edinburgh, 1859, studied medicine at the University of Edinburgh. His favorite professor was Joseph Bell, who taught his students how to make a successful diagnosis through observation and deduction. Doyle went into the practice of medicine after graduating, wrote fiction in his spare time, and in 1887, in the story A Study in Scarlet, he created a character based on his old professor, the detective Sherlock Holmes, who said, "Once you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth. Nothing clears up a case so much as stating it to another person." And the person whom Sherlock Holmes stated his cases to, of course, was a doctor, Dr. Watson. Holmes said, "You have a grand gift for silence, Watson. It makes you quite invaluable as a companion." Conan Doyle ended up writing 56 short stories and 4 novels starring Sherlock Holmes, in each of which Holmes demonstrated the powers of deduction. "There is nothing more deceptive than an obvious fact," he said. "It is a capital mistake to theorize before one has data. Insensibly, one begins to twist facts to suit theories instead of theories to suit facts." And it's the birthday of Peter Matheson, born in New York City, 1927, joined the Navy during World War II, went on to Yale. One of his professors at Yale asked if Matheson would like to work for the CIA, which was newly formed. Matheson asked if he could be sent to Paris, and the professor agreed. So, Matheson said, "out of sheer greed and opportunism, off I went." The CIA helped fund Matheson's founding of the Paris Review, and in Paris, Matheson infiltrated the circle of French communists to find out what they were up to. But as the McCarthy trials got attention in America, Matheson resigned from the CIA. Spent 3 years working unsuccessfully as a commercial fisherman on Long Island, and in 1956, at the age of 29, took off across the country in a Ford with a sleeping bag, some books, a shotgun, and wrote a book about it called Wildlife in America, which caught the eye of the New Yorker magazine, where Matheson wrote about a trip to the Amazon. Went on to write novels, including At Play in the Fields of the Lord and The Snow Leopard. Here's a poem for today by Hal Sirovitz, entitled Wedged. "You were the one who followed me into the elevator and asked for my phone number," she said. "I didn't lead you on. In fact, I tried discouraging you. I told you I had lots of problems. I was used to being alone. But now that you've wedged yourself into my life, don't think leaving me will be as smooth as our first elevator ride. It'll be like walking up a flight of stairs." Wedged, a poem by Hal Sirovitz, from Before, During, and After, published by Soft Skull Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Nook, Simple Touch with Glow Light by Barnes & Noble. Designed for bedtime reading, Glow Light offers paper-like reading with the lights on or off. Available at neighborhood Barnes & Noble stores or Nook.com. Produced by Nick Vetter, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're in tune with KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas, and KTOO is also broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, you can tune K276AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, you hear us on K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210AS at 89.9.